the beautiful campus of Texas A&M University, the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology brings you the Sports Medicine Podcast. Our mission is to make sense of and connect the science, practice, and application of the latest findings in sports medicine and human performance to the real world. Here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Hello, and I'd like to welcome you to the Huffines Institute Sports Medicine Podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time to download us today and taking the time to listen. We continue to try to bring you the leaders in sports medicine in the country and in the world. Today, we are so pleased to have with us a special guest all the way from New York City today, Dr. Carol Garber, who is an associate professor in the Department of Biobehavioral Sciences there. Maybe more importantly, she recently was elected as vice president of the American College of Sports Medicine, which is the largest governing body for exercise science in the country. So welcome to the podcast, Carol. Glad to have you here.
Thanks, Tim. Glad to be here.
Yeah. It's quite fun to... We were just chatting before they started about the difference in weather in the different parts of the country. So it's kind of cool to be able to talk to somebody someplace else for a while. And we're going to just start off really quickly today. Carol has, for the listeners, Carol has made her name in a variety of different areas in the field. But in particular, we're going to talk today about credentialing in fitness and exercise science. So let's just start off. Carol, do you think that people that are like personal trainers and so forth should have a license to practice?
Well, I think I would probably support that at this point. I mean, I think there are a number of different ways to regulate professionals or people who work in a field. But I think particularly in the area of personal training and other areas of practicing and exercise physiology and exercise science, you know, we have no regulation as to who can actually be working in the field and no standard of practice or training that a person needs to have. So that really can be a problem, I mean, especially when you think about that, you know, you can't go have your hair cut without having a licensed professional cut your hair because it's deemed that there's enough risk to cutting your hair that a license is necessary. So I think in the field of personal training, since anyone can basically step in, that it's definitely something that we want to consider.
Now, there's no state in the United States that has a licensure law for personal training, is there?
Not for personal trainers. So there have been a number of attempts in many states, but none of those have actually been successful. And honestly, most of the bills that have been written haven't been very well written. So even people who support the licensure idea for personal trainers haven't been very supportive of those pieces of legislation.
Well, you had a couple of profound thoughts there in what you just said, and I should tell everyone that one of the reasons that we're talking to Carol about this topic is because she was the leader of an effort in Massachusetts for several years to get licensure for clinical exercise physiologists. And now, Carol, can you give us let us know what is the difference between a clinical exercise physiologist and a personal trainer?
Right. Well, a clinical exercise physiologist is someone who has a degree in exercise physiology or exercise science or kinesiology, usually at the master's level, although some will have a bachelor's degree, and they have extra expertise in working with people who have chronic diseases such as heart disease or diabetes or lung disease. So they really have the experience to work with people who have more complex medical issues.
So these professionals they can work with healthy people, but they don't necessarily work with healthy people in general.
Right, exactly. So, you know, while a personal trainer may or may not have any special training, they particularly don't have any particular training working with people with diseases that, you know, can really complicate a person's ability to do exercise.
Okay. Now, it would seem reasonable that if someone is working in a clinical setting with people that have some kind of disease, that they would have some special, shall we say, some special credentials. Someone would recognize them as being appropriate to work in that setting. Are there any states, and we were talking about personal trainers a while ago, are there any states that actually license clinical exercise physiologist. So if I know if I've had a heart attack and I'm going through cardiac rehab, the person that I'm working with on my exercise program is actually qualified to do that.
Right. Actually, only Louisiana has a license for clinical exercise physiologists.
Go Louisiana, huh?
Yeah. So, I mean, there are other states that have been working towards that, including Massachusetts is mounting another effort to push this through. And, you know, it's unclear whether that will actually happen. I will just say one thing, though, that, you know, just the lack of a license doesn't necessarily mean the person that you're working with isn't qualified to do the work.
Mm.
The license would just really more further restrict who can call themselves a clinical exercise physiologist.
It's kind of a stamp by the state, isn't it?
Exactly. It's really the way the state says, hey, you know, we recognize that there's some risk to the public, and we're going to step in, and we're going to sort of look over the shoulders of the preparation for people who say that they can do certain things to really make sure that they can.
So you make a good point earlier that most states license hairdressers, but they don't license clinical exercise physiologists. That would seem to be a paradox, wouldn't it?
It does seem that way. I mean, actually, a lot of the people that you know, work with maybe daily or, you know, multiple times in your day, plumbers, electricians, hairdressers, all of those individuals do have a license.
Mm.
So it does seem to be a paradox.
So is exercise, and we'll come back to the question, another question here in a few minutes that you raised, but why is exercise science behind the times?
Well, I think there are a lot of reasons. I mean, one is that we really haven't had sort of agreement as a profession about what the preparation requirements are for all graduates. So, you know, you'll see a lot of variability in the curricula across, you know, many universities. So, you know, what you might find in universities in Texas may be quite different than, you know, what you might find in the Northeast or the Southeast or the Northwest of the country. So I think part of it is that we've really focused on more the science core and not as much on the practice of the practical application.
Now that standardized curriculum, that some of that has been changed recently, right, with some accreditation programs?
Right. So we currently, there is an accreditation program available in exercise science, both for bachelor's and master's level exercise science or kinesiology programs. And that does set a standard for what the curriculum includes and includes some very applied aspects and that would be included so people would get practical experience and laboratory experience as well as the science. And unfortunately, a lot of schools haven't signed on to become accredited. So it's still at a critical point where, you know, most graduates of programs in exercise science or kinesiology are not accredited by this body, which is called CAHEB.
Mm. So we got to get everybody else on board, and then we can move forward.
We do, and I think, you know, sometimes as a profession, we don't always come together and agree on what's necessary. So we sometimes spend too much time, you know, enjoying the intellectual discussion about what's needed, and then, you know, we haven't really moved forward. So we really do need to come forward and move this forward if we want to see our graduates have jobs in the future.
Yeah. Now, for someone listening to this who may be considering going through some type of rehab program, exercise-based rehab program, or someone hiring a personal trainer, what are some things that someone can look for when they hire a personal trainer? We'll just stick with personal trainers right now, that might indicate that they have some knowledge and skills. Since we don't have a licensure, we can't say, well, are you a licensed personal trainer?
Right.
What else should people look for?
Right. Well, we can still look for what are sort of the voluntary credentials that still provide some extra certification, so to speak, that person that you're working with is well qualified. So I think one is actually looking for whether or not the person has a formal degree in the area of exercise science, so whether they've studied exercise science or physiology or kinesiology, either at the associate's degree, bachelor's degree, or master's degree. So that's quite helpful. And then beyond that, we look for some their specialty certification. So, you know, of course, I'm a bit biased being so actively involved in the American College of Sports Medicine, but I think most of us feel that the credentials offered by American College of Sports Medicine are really high quality. So there are the ACSM certified personal trainer. We have the health fitness specialists, and both of those are credentials that are designed for people who are working mostly with people that are mostly healthy. And then on the clinical side for cardiac rehab, you'd look for clinical credentials such as the clinical exercise specialist or the registered clinical exercise physiologist.
Hmm. Now, I would also, I guess, would we add to this national strength conditioning, the certified strength and conditioning specialist?
Absolutely.
CSCS?
Yeah, that's another organization that's really high quality credentials. So there's the certified strength and conditioning specialist. They also have a personal trainer certification, which is good. And I think the only, you know, for individuals who are trying to discern, someone in strength and conditioning really focuses on more resistance training and that kind of aspect of fitness training, whereas the ACSM certifications are more broad across both your cardio and aerobic exercise as well as strength and flexibility and those kinds of things.
Yeah, in both ACSM and NSCA certifications, those are some of the oldest. They've been out there the longest, haven't they?
They are. I mean, ACSM started back in the 70s, and NSCA, I'm not quite sure, but they've definitely been around for a couple decades at least.
Yeah, sometimes with age, there comes a distinction.
That's right. Well, and I think also because they've all started, you know, with the premise that, you know, an individual who's sitting for these credentials should have a degree, they've had formal study, whereas, you know, many other certifications, while they still might have some benefit and demonstrate that an individual has done some at least self-study, they don't require a college degree in the area.
Well, let me play the devil's advocate then. Now, we may have people listening going, you know what, I've been exercising for years, I've been in the gym, I've lifted weights, I know as much about training people as someone that's got a college degree.
Well, you know, while I would certainly say that there are some people who spend a lot of time in self-study and really do know their stuff, and you know, a college degree is just one indicator because, you know, just as every other area, you know, and those of us who are, you know, academics, we know that some of our students aren't necessarily people we would recommend. We're not really strong students, but it's just one piece of the puzzle to help you figure out whether or not the person you're working with is competent.
Yeah, and you can certainly say if they've got the degree, they've got the foundational knowledge.
Right,
and
right.
The sciences, whereas someone who has just been in the gym all their life may not necessarily have the physiology background or nutritional background to help you distinguish between good things and bad things.
Right, right. And also we would hope that people who've got a college degree have learned a little bit about what we call critical thinking. So they're able to, you know, think about in a specific situation based on their background in science and physiology, that they can really figure out what's affecting an individual under certain circumstance, where somebody who doesn't have that formal training may not really be able to have the depth of knowledge to apply to that particular situation.
Yeah, and nowadays it seems like there are more quacks in healthcare, especially in the exercise world, so that critical thinking is certainly necessary.
Right, exactly. And especially, you know, if you have an individual, as happens in many health clubs and even community centers, who, you know, actually do have some diseases, you know, everyone is different and may have different needs, and we'd really hope that there's somebody who can really think about what that particular individual needs and not just apply what I would say cookbook exercise training.
Right. It would seem that there is a bit of overlap between what we've been talking about, some of the services that are provided by personal trainers and clinical exercise physiologists, with some other allied health professions.
Mm-hmm.
Most notably, physical therapy comes to mind, some nurses. Why shouldn't those people be the ones that we turn to for our everyday exercise advice?
I think that, you know, those professions certainly provide a lot of benefit and often may work in, you know, cardiac rehabilitation as an example or other areas of physical rehabilitation. But, you know, those professions have a different training than exercise physiology graduates and professionals. So, you know, for example, while a nurse may work in cardiac rehabilitation, they generally don't have any formal training in exercise. And while they can manage sort of the basic things, they don't have that depth of knowledge that an exercise physiologist would bring and, you know, be able to handle multiple situations. You know, the physical therapist, you know, has amazing expertise in the human body, and but, you know, their focus in movement is really more of a problem based. So if you have problem with your elbow, a physical therapist is excellent because they can really work in understanding what the problem is and help you to rehabilitate that problem through exercise and other modalities. But on the other hand, the exercise physiologist really focuses on the whole body. So we're really considering like how your whole body, how fit you are overall. And while we'll take a problem into consideration in our recommendations for your fitness program, we're not really trying to fix that particular problem per se. You know, even in cardiac rehab, we're trying to help you become stronger and help you to resume your life and be healthier. We're not trying to really fix your heart.
I think most of the really successful rehab programs that I've seen, whether it be cardiac or pulmonary or a variety of other rehab programs, have all had some combination of nursing support, physical therapy support, exercise physiology support, and athletic training support in many cases.
Yeah, I mean, we all bring slightly different perspective to the table. And, you know, when patients can see all of us, it's really the ultimate, and you can really gain enormously. And I think also for we as professionals, when we work in those settings, I think we're challenged. We really learn and develop a much more comprehensive view of the individual so we can really help them much better.
Yeah. Well, Carol, we're running a little bit short on time here, and we always give our guest an opportunity to give us a take-home message. So from our discussions today, we really haven't touched the science that much, but what would you give folks as a take-home message if they're looking for qualified exercise professionals?
Well, I think, you know, I've already mentioned the college degree. I think looking for a certification, such as from American College of Sports Medicine or National Strength and Conditioning Association. And I would also ask them questions about their experience working with individuals who might have the same problems that you have. So, you know, if you have heart disease or you have, a bad back or have other health problems, it's really important to ask that person what kind of experience. And also whether they have some support, you know, do they have a relationship with a physician or a physical therapist or dietitian so that they may be able to help you in a more comprehensive way.
Yeah. What is the future?
Well, I wish I had a crystal ball, but I'm hoping that, first we can really decide what the preparation is for exercise physiologists, and so we can move forward with really good, strong credentials for all exercise physiologists, whether you're working at personal trainer level or the clinical level, and then ultimately we will move towards licensure. But I honestly think if we can get these other things in place first, we're really going to do a lot for our profession and, most importantly, for the people who work with us as clients and patients.
Well, Carol, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a real treat to have you here, and I know our listeners will really enjoy this podcast. We want to thank everyone that's listened in today and taken the time to download. Thank you for taking the time to be with us today. And we have, don't think we forgot, we have our question here for your free T-shirt. So, Justin?
So, which state is the only one to require certified clinical exercise physiologists?
Great question. Be the first one to email us with the answer to that. And if you don't know the email address, you can hit the website and just click on the link. And there it is. And it's never too late to try. So even if you think, well, geez, it's been 2 days since it's been released, go ahead and send it out. Send your email anyway, and you have a good chance to win. So again, thank you, Carol, for being with us.
Well, thank you, Tim. It was really a pleasure.
You're more than welcome. And thank you all again. And we just hope that you have a healthy and active week.
The Sports Medicine Podcast is produced by Justin Dobson and licensed by the Huffines Institute at Texas A&M under a Creative Commons 3.0 license.
You can share it as much as you want, and you can talk or blog about it all you want. Just don't change it or charge money for it. This podcast is made possible by support from the Omar Smith family and the Sydney and J.L. Huffines family. Our music was composed, performed, and graciously provided by Dave Zeltner Productions, your source for quality music and music production since 1992. Find them at www.davidzeltner.com. Our opening and closing credits were provided by John Miles Productions at johnmilesproductions.com. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.